Excuse me, are you tourists here?
Yes,
I am.
Where are you from?
From Germany.
What brings you to Fairbanks?
My friend.
Excuse me, are you a tourist?
Yes.
Where'd you come from?
Illinois.
Why did you come to Fairbanks?
Oh, it was on the tour, and I also like Alaska.
What did you expect to find in Fairbanks?
Lots of mountains, trees, so on. Animals.
Does it look like you expected?
Yeah.
Excuse me, are you a tourist?
Yes.
Where'd you come from?
Ontario, California.
What brings you to Fairbanks?
With my mother on a tour to see Alaska.
What did you expect Fairbanks to be like?
I don't know. My mother likes it better because of the dryness, but I like Anchorage better.
Carla Zervos's job is to see to it that visitors, tourists, like Fairbanks better. As the director of the Fairbanks Visitors and Convention Bureau, she's conducting a survey to find out just what kind of people come, the reasons for coming, and how much they're contributing to the local economy. Preliminary results show visiting friends and relatives, getting a glimpse of Mount McKinley, driving as far north as is readily accessible, and an interest in the economic potential of the area as the primary reasons for tourism.
There are several different definitions of a tourist. The one that is probably most universally accepted, it comes from the World Tourism Organization in the United Nations. They defined a tourist as a person who spends 24 hours away from home for the purpose of business or pleasure.
There's no profile yet of the typical Fairbanks tourist, though it is clear that the average age of tourists is dropping.
Probably 10 years ago, we were up into the 60 range as far as age, and we are now down into the 40, which is a phenomenal drop in the average age of the tourist just in the last decade.
Do you think the appeal of Fairbanks has changed?
I don't know that the appeal has changed so much as the fact that we are marketing ourselves as to what we are. We are not a modern urban metropolitan area, but we do offer probably the most unique Alaskan experience anyone who travels here can find. Log cabins, the gold rush kind of experience, and the wilderness, people who live in the suburbs where there are moose nibbling in their backyards. That's really unique to someone who comes here from New York or Los Angeles.
But seeing those sights isn't so easy, particularly for the non-tour tourist. Public transportation outside of the downtown area is negligible, and to areas with gold mines and moose, it's non-existent. Zervos admits that's a major problem.
One of the things that we desperately need, we need transportation on Sundays. When a visitor has only 24 hours here with us, and that 24 hours happens to be on a Sunday, they cannot get to Alaskaland, they cannot get to the University Museum, they cannot get to a lot of the things in the downtown area unless they are tremendous walkers.
And even if they are good walkers, there's the question of whether the walk or the ride is worth it.
Alaskaland itself, which you mentioned is a tourist attraction, is pretty tacky. The Chamber of Commerce log cabin building that we're sitting in is surrounded by drunks. Is that the kind of impression you want to give a tourist?
Well, I believe that you mentioned the log cabin that's nearest and dearest to my heart. I believe that if we offer an alternative for the downtown area, that things will change. I can give you one example that happened here just last weekend. We had a couple of drunks who came up to the door and put their backs against the wall and started to slide and sit. And one of them turned to the other one and said, "Oh, they're open. Don't sit there." And they went somewhere else. And I believe if we offer an alternative to the downtown area, that less desirable element will go somewhere else. Right now there's nothing else being done here, and that's why they're here.
You don't think people passed out on the lawn next to the sign giving the directions and mileages to all sorts of places around the world makes Fairbanks seem like less than the Golden Heart City?
Well, I think that those of us who live here are probably a little more embarrassed about that than the visitor. They come here and they think that's somewhat quaint.
Many of these somewhat quaint drunks are native people. Other than having one native employee, which Zervos hopes will give another side of native culture, she admits that nothing is being done to educate tourists about the ethnic diversity of the area. That's especially important given the number of tourists that use Fairbanks as a departure point for trips to bush communities, to the Inupiaq Eskimo cities of Kotzebue, Nome, and Barrow, and the Gwich'in Athabascan village of Fort Yukon, for example. Anchorage has given thought to a cultural center, says Zervos, similar to one in Hawaii,
where the natives have the opportunity to present
present their history, their culture, their crafts to the tourists prior to them taking a tour, particularly of the bush communities, so that when they go there, they are not disappointed. They know what they will experience. And if they don't want to see a quaint little community where people are carving jade, that they should not book a tour. And I think that's a monumental step forward for the Native community. And I'd like to see something like that happen here in Fairbanks.
Primarily, what's good for Fairbanks is what's good for the economy. And tourists are very good for the economy. In the summer, they spend about $30,000 a day in Fairbanks alone.
What's happening with our economy is very bad for those of us who live here, but it's also very good for tourism. In the last 9 years, the price of airfare to the United States has dropped about 40% for Europeans. Our dollar is worth much more in terms of currency exchange, and I happen to believe that the future of Alaska's tourism lies in international marketing. What that will do is stabilize our internal economy in the state, as perhaps we get into trouble times, perhaps when the pipeline is obsolete, we can look to tourism as a viable part of our economy. It's right now second in the state, only to the petroleum industry. Excuse me, are you tourists?
Yes.
Where are you from?
From Massachusetts.
When you came to Fairbanks, or before you got here, what did you expect to find?
Well, I expected to find a sort of a busy city from what I had read about it, but when I saw what we saw on the way up here, I began to wonder.
Excuse me, are you a tourist?
Yeah.
What brings you to Fairbanks?
What's again?
What brings you to Fairbanks?
The car. This car.
Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.
Who would wear a feather boa?
Oh, in a sophisticated lady. When she's dressed for an evening out on the town, possibly with her husband.
Possibly not.
Yeah.
Turkey feather boas are only one of the items sold for sophisticated ladies at J.J. Quinn's Boutique in Anchorage. It's located directly across the street from a plush hotel and up the block from a strip joint. Proprietor Ethel Washington sells East Indian clothing, and as the sign on the outside of the building proclaims, she specializes in exotic lingerie.
It's lingerie that's not the regular run-of-the-mill. I would say lingerie, all the type, crotchless panties, half-cut brassieres, things similar to what you would get from Frederick's magazine.
Mm-hmm. Is this streetwear?
No, it isn't.
When would a person wear crotchless panties or bras like this?
Well, the bras would go with a lot of the low-cut dresses. The crotchless panties are two ones liking, possibly her Superman arm, just something different and something that she might like for herself.
Can we look at some of the stuff that's over there in that case?
Sure. Okay. A lot of these things are costumes for dancers.
Mm-hmm. For exotic dancers.
Exotic dancers, yes, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Can we look at some of the, what are they, G-strings?
Or? Yes, these are G-strings. The sequin G-strings. And these all have pastes to go with this particular G-string.
Matching.
Yes, matching pastes to go with the G-string.
Can you wash something like this? The sequin kind of thing?
Well, no. You would either have to dry clean it or sponge it.
Mm-hmm. When a person gets something like this, do they tend to pick out their favorite color, or how do you pick out a G-string?
Well, most ladies know what they want, and they just choose the colors they want. Mm. Uh-huh. And most dancers, naturally, they choose their colors to match the lighting of the building where they dance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there different sizes, or is it one size?
No, usually one size and a G-string.
Okay. How about pasties?
The pasties are usually 1, 1.5 inch, 2 inch, 2.5 inches.
To correspond with the size of the nipple.
Right. Uh-huh.
How do they stick on? I've always wondered, how does a pasty stay pasted?
You use eyelash glue to do the pastes with, and that means it's easy to remove. You know how it is when you remove eyelashes. It can't be no tough glue. It has to be a light glue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, how about some of the other things you've got? You said you had crotchless panties. Could we look at some of those?
Sure. Okay, now there's the crotchless panty.
Yeah, all it is
a regular... All it is just a panty with a slit crotch. And a lot of the crotches have that little bow tie in the center where you can tie them or you can leave them open. And then some of the crotchless panties do not have a tie in the bottom. It's just a slit, like this one, which has the V-slit in it, mm-hmm. which is a better seller than the one with the bow tie in the seat.
Not so much trouble getting in there. Eh?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And we even have the super sheer bikinis for the men. And we also have G-strings for the men.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have things like disco falls. We have things like the emotion lotion.
And what's disco frost?
Disco frost is a frosting that you can put in on your body, like if you're going out for the evening and you want to sort of glow. We have it in the silver to match your silver outfits, or we have it in the gold to match gold outfits.
Most of the things you have seem to be black and red.
Well, black and red is the most sensuous colors when you really want to be sexy. Black and red are the most colors we sell, so we maintain the most colors in things that we sell the most of.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But we also have a lot of different pastel shades, too, in lingerie such as nighties, short nighties, long things. We have happy coats. We have the mirror widows, the push-up brassieres in different colors, and just a lot of super nighties here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The mirror feathers, is that what they are?
No.
Those are turkey bowl feathers.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And we have those in about 12 different colors.
You mind if I feel one?
No. Go right on, try one on.
They're really soft. How would a person wear one of these?
If she had her evening gown on, or if she had a low-cut dress or a real skimpy-fitting dress, it's just to finish up a costume. The turkey feather bowls is just like a wearing a mink stole or mink jacket.
Now, a lot of these things are things that you don't associate with something that you wear just day-to-day. Do you find that you get a different kind of clientele for this part of the store than for the other?
Well, this is mostly for dances, and we have a lot of men that like for their wives to be exotic for them at home as well as going out to the places watching the dances. They like to see their ladies wear it for them. So this is why we have it.
You like to wear it too?
No, I don't. I don't necessarily wear anything like this. I mean, I have it for public use.
But I think it's pretty,
mm-hmm.
and it's for the people that need it. I mean, I do a service here.
Ethel Washington. Her service is selling exotic lingerie. I'm Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. The Fairbanks Airport is much like your basic small-town airport, small and dingy with a few vending machines, lounge areas with molded plastic chairs, a dark bar, and a fast-food cafeteria that specializes in donuts and coffee. But unlike most small-town airports, Fairbanks is an international airport. It says so right in its name, the Fairbanks International Airport. The price of jet fuel is low here, so a number of foreign jets refuel, and there are plans to encourage more international air traffic and therefore more international tourists. But the present facility can't handle a significant increase in either aircraft or visitors, whether domestic or foreign. To address this problem, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities is devising a master plan for future airport development. 93.75% of the funding for this plan is coming from the Federal Aviation Administration. The plan at this point is two-thirds complete, and last night consultants and Department of Transportation representatives conducted a public meeting in Fairbanks to present the alternative concepts for the airport and the passenger terminal, and to receive comment on those proposed alternatives. Approximately 4 dozen people attended. Jerry Rafson, a planning engineer in the Fairbanks office of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, explained the impetus behind the master plan.
One of the reasons that we've had to develop the new master plan at this time is the new economic conditions that we've seen occur in Fairbanks. As we all know, you know, in recent years we've had the boom-bust cycle. We've had construction of the pipeline, construction of the refinery, an increase in international flights, and large increase in mining in the area. A huge potential for development of agriculture, and we have our own mainstays of tourism and the general construction industry. We can see on the horizon a new natural gas pipeline and perhaps a gas conditioning plant, although there's some doubt to that. And another huge unknown in the Fairbanks economy, which is the national interest grant legislation, which is now being resolved in Congress. That will affect the recreational uses of the land as well as the mining uses of the land. And it does throw up a large degree of unknown into the master plan. So for that reason, we have developed our master plan on the basis of a range of aviation demands.
That range of aviation demands was limited, as a handout that was provided said, to, quote, the planner's concept of the ultimate development by the year 2000, and that's only 20 years away. The concepts presented varied in the amount of effort and finances required, the amount of disruption, and other related considerations. Noise problems were glossed over, and no one from the audience inquired what the changes in noise patterns would be, nor were many people concerned with the insignificant amount of attention to the inside of the passenger terminal relative to the emphasis on the parking space around it. One person noted that there were no windows in the proposed international holding area within the terminal. So much for increasing international tourism. A number of people were concerned that the plans did not reflect future cargo expansion needs, and the fear that Anchorage would get more than Fairbanks was also voiced. As one person said, quote, there are lots of plans, but the action to support them has all gone to Anchorage and their international airport. I'm Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. In 1961, the first Eskimo Olympics Games were held in Fairbanks. The Games, unlike the Olympic Games in, say, Moscow, are held annually rather than every 4 years and go on for 3 nights, this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It's no longer called the Eskimo Olympics, but the World Eskimo Indian Olympics, according to Olive Anderson, president of this year's Olympics Committee.
You know, the first time, 1961, when they started, it was only called Eskimo Olympic. So we decided to put the Indians in there. I guess they didn't think about the Aleuts.
Native people come from all over the state, possibly even the Aleutian Islands, to participate. There are usually Canadian competitors as well, and Anderson would like to see Greenlandic and Siberian Eskimos attend in the future. The games are primarily those that Native Alaskans developed in the distant past, with some modern additions.
High kick, muck-a-keating contest, blanket toss, and four-man carry. I think it is. 2 foot high kick and crease pole walk. They'll be cutting fishing contest. They'll have that. And we're still looking for seals. So I don't know if we're going to get some. So I have to call Beryl.
For the seal skinning.
Right. So we didn't get any last year either, so I don't know about this year.
But it's for sure there will be a baby contest. That's been on the program for the past 5 years, and a queen contest. 11 young women have signed up for this year's competition. Some of the money collected for admissions to the games will pay for a scholarship for the winner of the queen contest. The remainder of the admissions fee is applied to housing and meals for games participants and rental of the university gym where all activities are held. For Olive Anderson, the games themselves are not the high point of the World Eskimo Indian Olympics.
What, for you, are the most exciting parts of the Olympics?
Well, the people comes in. It's, you know, I got a lot of relatives compete in those things, so it's really visit with the people, you know, all over. And you never see for the whole year. They come up to visit with us and then play games at the same time.
Those games and visits begin this evening. I'm Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.
And that's basically one of the reasons why we're here, out of our love for our fellow Jew, that being that we're all connected through something very unique, which is called the Jewish soul, which we all have in common. So this binds us together, and out of that love we come out to, even to Alaska.
According to Rabbi Gross, even in Alaska it's possible to follow the mitzvahs, including the one that requires keeping a kosher home. Gross mentioned a trip to the Fairbanks Safeway, where he found a section of kosher food, of matzah and chicken soup and gefilte fish. But there's a problem when it comes to meat. There are no kosher butchers in the state. A problem that's been solved by some of the Jews in Anchorage.
The individual Jews over there who do want to keep kosher, they import the meat out of Seattle. And I feel they could do the same thing over here.
Is it worth it to come this far for 1,500 people?
Yes, 100% it is. Otherwise, we wouldn't have came.
It says in the Torah that even that in respect as to a scale, for instance, that when you have a scale that's just a little bit below par with the other side of the scale, that if you just put a little bit more pressure on the other side, it's hasn't got as much weight, it can balance or even overweigh the other side. And the same is also true for a Jewish person. If we can just reach one Jewish person and bring him a little closer to Judaism, then it's worth it, even for one person.
Yenkel Bula and Nochem Gross, Lubavitch rabbis from Brooklyn, have reached more than one person on this trip, and I